You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 287 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live from Phillips Arena, high atop section 117, where I normally sit on game nights, and a very different experience than it has been for most of the season here on this fine Wednesday evening into Thursday. And the Hawks won this game by a final score of 126-80. Yes, I paused for effect there. 126-80 over the Sacramento Kings. The Hawks basically cut their season-long point differential sort of deficit in almost half with this particular victory. Coming into the game, the Hawks were a bottom five team in terms of point differential and net rating on the season. That's going to be improving quite a bit on the strength of a 46-point victory. In fact, this was the largest margin of victory in the history of the Hawks franchise, dating back to St. Louis. This is the first time the Hawks have won by 40 points or more in about 20 years. A pretty wild sequence for the Atlanta Hawks on this evening. Of course, some of that has to be attributed to the Sacramento Kings being woefully incompetent. That's probably the best way to put it. From the very beginning of this game, I think it was in the opening minutes, it was 14-3 after a 9-0 run to open the game for the Hawks, and I tweeted something to the effect of the Kings do not necessarily appear very invested in winning this particular basketball game, and that was even an understatement in the moment because they were awful from start to finish in this game. But still, you know, the Hawks played well, and the tenor in the locker room after the game was definitely more positive than anything that we've heard so far this season. Mike Budenholzer was very loose in the post-game press conference. The players were very happy in the locker room. That's the nature of having a win like that, where you kind of let your guard down in the fourth quarter, because you know the Hawks were they still managed to win the fourth quarter 34-19, but it was the 40-19 second quarter that kind of slammed the door shut in this game. I will say there was a brief very brief moment in which the Kings looked to have some fight in this game. They went on a 14-5 run in the early portion of the third quarter to get the to sort of bring the lead back to 20. The lead was never in doubt by any stretch, but it looked like it might be at least a semi-competitive game, but in short order that lead was pushed back to 30, and by the end it was 40, and then finally 46 at the final moment of the game. So it sort of goes without saying, it's going to be a pretty short podcast in terms of the ins and outs of this game. It was all good for the most part. The Hawks finished the game with a 132.1 offensive rating and an 83.9 defensive rating for a net rating of plus 48.2, which is absolutely ridiculous if you follow this stuff at all. That's off the charts. Yeah, that's sort of a simple way to put it. The Hawks shot 63% from the floor, 50 of 79, and from three, they were 16 of 32 for 50%. They actually missed six free throws in this game, or it would have been even worse. The Hawks had 40 assists. This Hawks team has not exactly been known for its high-end passing so far this season. To have 40 assists in the game is jarring in itself. That's a number that would have been seen even on the high end during the 2015 run when the Hawks were out of this world good a couple of years ago. This has been a very, 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 very interesting night on a number of levels. And again, they won by 46 points. So there is that. Before we get into the individual stuff, I do want to, a little bit of news to hit on, actually, from earlier in the day before we break down the individual performances. A couple of G League assignments were made. The Hawks announced on Wednesday afternoon that Nick Persino and Miles Plumlee would be headed to Erie to join the BayHawks. Plumlee, it was confirmed by Mike Budenholzer in the early going of the in his press availability at the top of the game tonight. Bud indicated that Plumlee was going to be down there for about two games. I believe it's Friday and Sunday that Erie will be playing, and then Plumlee, the plan is to bring him back at that point in time. Seems to be that he's healthy enough to play for the first time, which is encouraging. And then Persino, no timetable stated for him. That was less of a surprise, obviously, because Persino's not been playing really at all. I talked about that a little bit when they sent Tyler Dorsey down to Erie, but Persino has been even behind Dorsey. There was one game, at least, when Dorsey was firmly in the rotation when the Hawks were shorthanded. Persino's not had that honor at any point this season. So I think, aside from Dorsey being the guy that they obviously invested in with the draft, Persino's probably behind him even, and not a surprise at all to see him go down to the G League. Sort of actually want to see a little bit more of him at that level. level just to see what kind of skills come to the forefront. You know, it is obviously a lower level. Tyler Dorsey's been tearing it up at Erie in two games with some lights out numbers, even some rebound numbers off the charts. And Josh Majette's assist numbers are off the charts as well. I think he's averaging 14 assists a game so far in his stint in Erie. So it's definitely a different game in the G League, but at the same time, Bursino is a talented player. We'll see what the Hawks can sort of coax out of him at Erie. But sort of the leash is probably going to be pretty short because the Hawks don't have the same sort of investment in him that they do in Tyler Dorsey. So he's going to have to show something for them, the Hawks, to sort of hang on to him, have any incentive to hold on to him long term. With that said, that's really the only news portion of the, of today's podcast. The rest of it's focused on the game, obviously, and things, again, went very, very well. The starting lineup was interesting. You know, there's the same starting five that they've used for the last several games, although Ursula Ilyasova returned in this game. Luke Babbitt got the start, played 11 minutes, was actually very good in those 11 minutes, had 13 points and a single rebound only, but, you know, a very small sample, but I thought he played very well. Budenholzer, after the game, talked about how Babbitt almost didn't play at all in this game, apparently about 10 minutes before tip-off time. Bud was sharing this with the media that Babbitt's back flared up on him to the point where he was ruled out in the middle of the game with back spasms, but there was a tipping point where he almost didn't play at all, and after his first stint on the court, he went back to the locker room, sort of, and obviously no one outside of the team knew this at the time, but it was sort of an eyebrow raise as to why he went back there. He came back out, played for a little bit longer, and then at the half, the Hawks announced that he wouldn't be coming back in. So, you know, Bud stressed it probably wasn't going to be a long-term thing, but just sort of a short-term hiccup with Babbitt, but he's been playing very well. He played very well in this game, especially with the knowledge that he was fully hampered, made three of his four threes, and actually was pretty effective, was plus 18 in 11 minutes, so keep an eye on that for Saturday's game. The Hawks do have two days off now, though, on Thursday and Friday before they host the Celtics on Saturday, so that gives him a little bit of extra time to get right. Torian Prince played 32 minutes to lead everybody in the entire game on both sides. He was actually playing down the stretch, which was a little bit bizarre. I guess the fact that he's only sort of natural small forward on the roster probably lent itself to Bud leaving him out there a little bit longer than you might expect for the starting small forward to be playing in a 40-plus point blowout down the stretch. But he was a plus 38, so that's all you need to know about Prince's performance, although he wasn't that good individually, I don't think, but you know, 14 points, 8 assists, 5 rebounds, 4 steals, did have 5 turnovers. His ball handling has been a little bit questionable. Something I think that Tyler Jones was pointing out on Twitter that I agree with for sure during this game was that Prince is a little bit careless with the ball. I will say, you know, when he dribbles a lot, especially, it gets a little bit loose and have some ugly turnovers as a result. But if you just sort of take that away, everything else was pretty good in this game. And of course, everybody played well for the most part, but his numbers were good for a reason. Dennis Schroeder had a nice bounce back performance, 21 points, 8 assists. It was 8 of 12 from the floor and 2 of 4 from 3. Didn't have to necessarily bust it defensively here, which probably helped him. If you guys heard yesterday's podcast, you would know that I've been pretty low on his defense, but offensively, nice to see him bounce back here against a team with the Kings that wasn't playing that great, obviously. But Dennis being efficient and effective is a good sign for everybody involved. Kent Bazemore, pretty quiet night, 8 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, was plus 25 in 24 minutes. Just didn't do a whole lot, which was fine. There was no need for him to do a whole lot in this game. And finally, Dwayne Dedman had a massive game, 20 points, 14 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks, and only 24 minutes. It was 9 of 10 from the floor, 1 of 1 from 3. Dedman was the best player on the court in this game for either team. I thought he was just sort of flying around early on. I think he had 18 and 11 at the half in 16 minutes of play. It's cooled down a little bit in the second half, but there was a reason Dedman was a plus 21 here, and that was because he was very, very good in the spot. You know, Dedman's not quite that good of a player if you sort of extrapolate out long term, but he's been playing very, very well, and the Hawks definitely look to be getting a bargain on their $7 million investment with Dwayne Dedman for right now, because he's playing like a starting level center in the NBA, which is very encouraging for the future. On the bench, Tyler Cavanaugh played 19 minutes in a follow-up to his famous performance in New Orleans on Monday. I will say, early in the second half, Tyler Cavanaugh had played 13 minutes and John Collins had played 4 minutes, and that's something that I definitely do not endorse. By the end of the game, Collins played all of all of the down-the-stretch time in this game, I should say garbage time. Did end up playing more minutes than Cavanaugh, 22-19, but still, Cavanaugh playing that much is probably a little bit interesting on a number of levels here, but I do think that he was pretty good. But Budenholzer shouted him out after the game for his specific play. He didn't kill the Hawks at all, obviously, and his defense wasn't as big of an issue as it probably normally would be in this game, just because Sacramento was so bad. But four assists and 5 rebounds for Cavanaugh, and was a plus 21 in 19 minutes. John Collins, 14 points and 8 rebounds in 22 minutes. He was 7 of 9 from the floor. Most of that was garbage time, I'll be honest, but Collins was playing hard and flying flying around. Had a couple of highlight dunks in the second half, as you might expect. It's kind of an open floor game at that point when nobody's really busting it on defense, and that's definitely plays to Colin's strengths in terms of being able to just watch and sort of enjoy the majesty that is him flying around and dunking on people and doing crazy things on the glass. He did play reasonably well in his earlier time, although the numbers weren't great early. And he had a couple of moments again where he sort of looked lost in that first half, but still, it's a rookie. He played well. I don't think he was quite as good as the numbers indicate, just because all that garbage type stuff that we just mentioned, but I thought he was fine. Ilyasova came back in this game. I mentioned that earlier on the podcast briefly, but played 17 minutes, actually came back in late for a moment, was 0-4 from the floor, did have 8 rebounds, was actually dead even, was a 0 net rating in a game when the Hawks won by 46 points, so not the greatest look there for Ersan. I asked Bud after the game about Ilyasova returning, and he kind of gave we're just happy to see Ersan back kind of response. I didn't think Ersan looked good at all here, but I will say the same thing that I said earlier, is that Ilyasova didn't play well early on when he was healthy, or, you know, maybe not healthy. Missing 8 games, though, and him coming back here, I'm not going to take a huge judgment on exactly how he looked, but did not play particularly well, I wouldn't say. I'll be interested to see how he looks on Friday after 2 more days off. Sort of a good integration for him in this game, and there was a reason that Bud brought him back in the fourth quarter, and it was because I'm sure they just wanted to see him play a little bit more in a low-pressure setting. Isaiah Taylor, but 22 minutes, was a plus 28, 12 points and 4 assists. I thought he played well with 3-4 from 3. Malcolm Delaney played very well, 10 points, 4 rebounds, was 2-4 from 3 again, shooting about 50% from 3 on the season. So the regression stick is hitting Malcolm in a positive way after his woeful shooting last year. He's just not that bad of a shooter. We've seen that. He talked after the game, actually, about the fact that he'd never been in the kind of role that he was in last year ever in his career. He's sort of used to having the ball in his hands a little bit more as a scoring option. He was more of a pure facilitator last year. This year, they're playing him off the ball a little bit. And when I say off the ball, just not playing pure point guard and allowing him to sort of focus on his offense more. It's definitely seemed to be working recently. I will say, the shooting's going to probably regress a little bit back down to what it should be, but because 50% from 3 is not really sustainable. But Malcolm is a prolific shooter, and I think that will continue in the future. And lastly, Marco Bellinelli, 10 points. 5 assists, was 4 of 8 from the floor, 1 of 4 from 3. It took one hilarious shot, as we kind of talked about all the time with Bellinelli, but he played well in this spot. Just in general, this is a game that doesn't really need a whole lot more breakdown. It's just one of those things where everything went right for the Hawks, and the Kings just didn't come out of the gates trying really at all. Their bench was ghastly. I will say, as an NBA fan, that it was really troubling to me in general that Scalabissier Bissier played 7 minutes in this game. He didn't appear at all until the Kings were down by 40. He's arguably their best young asset. So that was sort of something that I did not necessarily enjoy seeing, as well as De'Aaron Fox not looking very good. That's not a huge surprise. He's a top 5 pick, but he was he's a one and done guy without a jump shot. I still believe in De'Aaron Fox, but without getting too deep into the Kings, they were awful in this game and just in general. And there should be some more of an asterisk next to this game when it comes to the Hawks' performance, just because, there's no scenario in which the Hawks should be winning a game by 46 points this season over anyone, and they have to sort of have some cooperation from the opponent in order to do that. But still, they actually took care of business and did that. Bud was very pleased, and the players were very pleased. As I said at the top of the podcast, there's a reason for that, and a little bit of positive mojo going into the game on Friday, on Saturday against the Boston Celtics. In general, I'm probably going to take the day off on Friday for the podcast. This is going to be, of course, the Thursday podcast. If something breaks, I'll certainly come back and do that. But the fifth show of the week is going to be coming back on Sunday morning, I should say, in the aftermath of the Boston Celtics game. And then we'll sort of check in after that. So just a little bit of a programming note there. No show on Friday. And obviously, there's a lot of content you guys catch up on, tell your friends, and do all that fun stuff. I definitely would recommend checking out the show in reverse as well, especially if I have guests on. Normally, when I have guests on, it's more of a big picture conversation, so it's not necessarily specific to that particular game, unless I sort of note that. So, there's an NBA draft episode with Cole Swicker from a couple weeks ago that's definitely worth checking out, as well as Jeff Siegel this week, sort of on some big picture stuff and some ESPN RPM and some numbers, some nerdy stuff, which is always fun on the podcast. So, thanks for listening, as always, everybody. I really really appreciate everybody doing that. It's definitely nice, even for those of us who want the Hawks to not necessarily win a ton of games this year in order to themselves up for the future. It's always good to see a team cruise to victory like this and have a lot of fun doing it. So that'll be all for me from Phillips Arena on this fine Wednesday into Thursday, and I hope you guys enjoy the rest of your week. We'll see you guys in the aftermath of the Celtics game on Saturday night.